everything up to there describes the Western culture. And 99 9/10% or whatever absurd number of the people of the world never have energy available to them at any center higher than those three, except in just moments, rare moments. Everybody's got rare moments, rare moments. But for almost everybody, it's all available in the first, second, and third chakra. So you meet somebody who is primarily a first chakra person, and what you're doing is you're really helping them come into the second chakra. And then they're in the second, you're helping them get into the third. You're helping a lustful being develop an ego. And that, in a sense, is what Western religions have become about. Superego. Super third chakra. Super third chakra. Because it... See, according to the Freudian system, it treats one, the first chakra, as id, as uncontrollable animal impulses. The second chakra as sexual desire, and the third chakra as superego. That's in that system. I'm just translating systems for the fun of it, just because it's... Because many people think in these Western systems, and it's fun to make these translations. So that you, Freud talked about religion being perverted sexual energy. And the reverse side of that coin is that sexual energy is blocked religion. Pay your money and you pick your chakra. You pick your center that you want to be, you know, be dominated by. Now, the critical place is the opening between the third and the fourth chakra in this system that I'm presenting to you now. Because the third and the fourth, and it's interesting that that is the key place, like in an octave, in do, re, mi, between mi and fa is a half note, and all the rest up till then have been whole notes. And there are two critical places between 3 and 4 and 6 and 7 in an octave, and those are the same things in the chakra system. In fact, the whole octave model applies in chemical analysis, in atomic structure, in music. It's like, it's one of the lawful sets of relationships in nature, and Gurdjieff points out that. And this is when you start to get into seeing how it all is in the lawful ways of the universe, you see that the octave plays a very key role. The octave is more than a manifestation of man's rational process. What do you say? Let's have an octave. Should we have a 7-note or a 12-note? You can do rational innovations and get to the 12-note and so on, but those seven major distinctions, or at least that 3 to 4 and 6 to 7 is all I know at this moment. I don't know how many breaks there are in between. Now, to convert, to go from 3 to 4, to make that conversion in energy from 3 to 4, in the pictures in the old Hindu books, it shows Om, which is enlightenment, casting its rays, and it covers everything from the fourth chakra on up. That is, to go from 3 to 4, you enter into a state of realization. You can only get to 4 when you see through the illusion. You can only get to 4 when you start to wake up. Because the fourth chakra is connected with compassion, and you can only truly experience compassion when you have finished with your own ego to some point. Because if I am too much ego, you always have got to be object for me. I can never identify with you enough because I'm too busy identifying with myself. Only when I can say, well, I'm really not that important, I'm just another part of nature's stuff or the unwinding process, can I start to see you as us. And when I see you as us, then I start to experience the compassion, which is to be able to truly empathize with what you're experiencing at this moment through an identity of a group larger than one. That is, I've identified with you and me as one. Here we are, that's us. I've moved from me to us. And that fourth chakra, called the Anahata, is the pranic energy center, is located in right here. The word, the Sanskrit word, is the Hridayam, the Hridayam, H-R-I-D-A-Y-A-M, the Hridayam, Hridayam, the spiritual heart. It's not the physical heart. I mean, you can put in a nylon heart, and you can still have your Hridayam. It's not. See, that was another one. It's just like, you know, touch the moon, and you're going to ruin the romance of the moon. Take out a man's heart, and what's going to be left? He'll be a heartless being, see, because my heart beats for you, and all of the romantic poetry has led one to identify that physical heart with the spiritual heart, or with that pranic center. See, because we in the West, although we don't recognize this energy system I'm talking about, we do recognize a lot of parallels to it along the way. And this fourth chakra is this too technical for everybody? Is that not useful? Anybody lost? Anybody completely lost and suffering? I don't want anybody to be suffering. This fourth chakra, this compassion, is still very much in the world, very much in the world. It's what you would, it would be comparable to what you'd call the lower astral planes. It's not worldly necessarily in the physical sense of worldly, but it's interpersonal at some level or other. In other words, it's like, it's comparable to lower stages of samadhi where you experience great bliss. There's an experiencer. There's still subject-object. But you're able to empathize with the object because you're not so thoroughly attached to the subject. They haven't become one yet, but you can see that they are similar things. You get into what's called relative reality in the philosophical sense. It's like when I started to, we did our first research at Harvard on psilocybin and did our first analysis of the first 200 protocols of people's reports of experiences with psilocybin. The lowest levels of experiences were these heightened sensory things. I mean, it feels so good, and it looks so good, and it sounds so good, and I've never heard a sound like that, and it's all n-dimensional, and that whole part of it, you know. Super sensual trip. And then right after that, that was where everybody, almost everybody, I mean 90-some percent of the people, then you get down to about 80 or something like that percent of the people, 70-some, somewhere between there, and you get to people who report an experience in which they're with somebody else, and they suddenly see that you, the way, who you are and who I am is similar, and the way in which we're different is really quite superficial. In other words, you've done a figure ground reversal so that you see, it's like suddenly looking around and seeing that behind the shorts and the blue shirt and the brown shirt and the red slacks and the aqua and the, you know, sweatshirt and all that, there are human bodies. It's like seeing the similarity that's behind the difference. You're recognizing the difference. You're still you, and I'm still me, but I dig that you and I are made of the same stuff at some level or other. That's fourth chakra. Fourth chakra. And that, as an interesting sociological sidelight, was for me the first time that I had been with a person of a different color of skin, when I had seen color of skin as a manifestation of a superficial thing rather than as a being so caught up in it that I couldn't separate the person from his skin. Because even though I had grown up in a culture which you were always liberal It was one of those intellectual liberal type things where I have no feelings. See, I have no feelings. See, I mean, I have no feelings. You know, that kind of protesting because of that uptightness, because you were caught in that difference, those differences. It's like the guilt when you're very smart, or the discomfort when you have some bizarre physical characteristics. I mean, when you get to another level, you see that beauty is beauty is beauty, and it hasn't anything to do with physical characteristics. But when you don't know that, you can get attached to your physical characteristic, and you look at everybody, and all you see is their nose, because you're concerned about your nose. And everybody in the world is determined by whether they have long, straight, hooked, round, pointed, curved noses. That's your domain. You live in the world of the nose. And the poignancy of the little girls, you know, who put their whole life hope on having a nose surgery. And who they are afterwards. And they win and they lose both, you see. They win and they lose both. And you feel that every time you're around some girl who has been a model since she was very young, a very, very beautiful girl, you feel how trapped she is in that dimension. It's just like being very rich. You get trapped in your money. It's the same place you get trapped in. You get trapped in one of those manifestations, and you're stuck in it. It's a tough round. It catches you with ego, whether you like it or not. But at this fourth chakra, you are aware of that which is common to man, although you still are in the world of individual differences, and there's still an attachment in you to worldliness, to staying in the where there are beings. It's like heaven, where there's angels and lords and all that stuff. There's all these beings hanging out. There's Guru Rinpoche, and there's, you know, all these guys and gals and devas and, you know, rakshasas and all these beings, and they're all around, and you still are attached to having them manifest. That's why they manifest, because a Buddhist knows that they aren't and they never were. They're all more illusion. So it's called the lower astral planes, fourth chakra. Then the fifth chakra is this chakra is where the compassion becomes so intense, and the worldliness falls away so much, and the desire for separateness falls away, and the desire for oneness gets so strong that all you can see is God everywhere. This is what you call a God intoxicant. It's somebody who's just like flipped out over God. And in India, they hang around the temples, and in the West, we put them in mental hospitals. Because after all, I mean, like, who wants a nut hanging around that just, like, is crying because, like, Ramakrishna. I mean, Ramakrishna couldn't make it for one day in the West. Unless they kept him in a box, you know. Lock him up in a minute. Walks down the street and he goes into samadhi. And they got to have two guys holding him up. Well, you know, he better have a big bank account. You know, a rich man they call eccentric. A poor man they call crazy.
To cross the threshold from the third chakra to the fourth, and then be able to control your crossing into the fifth and make it a periodic thing, or is crossing into the fifth?
Well, you can obviously see immediately that the question comes from the third chakra, right? I mean, you can hear it. Like, can I control losing control? Mm-hmm. Is an ego question, okay? I mean, I'm going to answer it. I just want to give you that little added little fill-up on it.
But you would want to brought up now.
I understand, but I'm not putting any value on it. I'm just describing what happens to people. Now, the question of whether you control it or not is that when you were at four, you're really at four, and when four starts to fall away, it really starts to fall away, and then you're no longer the guy who wants to control it. See, so that... I mean, a lot of people that are in mental hospitals are really grooved. They're in a fine scene. It's a total care situation. They could be at an ashram. They're being fed and kept warm. And I look at mental hospitals and prisons as that way. You can do a take on them as places of incarceration, or you can do a place in them as total care scenes that the society sets up for somebody who doesn't want to play according to the other game rules, or can't play because of some particular disposition. Sure, sure. Because what happens to most kids that take acid and get frightened is that they flip into, like, fifth chakra. See? Sometimes fifth, sixth, even seventh chakra for a moment. And they are around people who don't understand what's happening to them. And they say, in effect, you're crazy. And then because they don't have any model for what's happened to them, they're going in and out, they're flipping in and out. The person brings them down into the third chakra, from which they look at their experience and they say, yes, it's craziness. And then they treat themselves as somebody who is a borderline psychotic or somebody who is insane. And then they go on a long trip of becoming, getting over my insanity, see, which is a bizarre thing from this other point of view, you see. I'm getting over being in the fifth chakra. So I can live in the third chakra like all good, healthy, normal people do. Which is a bizarre thing from an evolutionary standpoint. It's like a group of fish sitting in the ocean saying, like, that nut went up on land. Can you imagine that? I mean, like, I'm not going up on land. Kind of a, you know. Look at what a weirdo. He's got, you know, not only gills, but, you know, he's got this breathing thing. He uses air. I won't have anything to do with him. He's not our kind. Not my kind of fish.
Yeah, it can kill you if you take too much.
Yeah, it can kill you, right? See, and the thing that many well, a lot of the literature, say, about intentional communities is really concerned with what is a fourth chakra community like. We all know what third chakra things are like. That's society. And society is primarily a second and third chakra. I mean, the original societies are first chakra, like, I'm the law, and I'm here in Twin Forks to show you that you can't get away with killing a guy just because he, you know, he looked mad at you. That's survival. That's that level. And then the guns and the whole thing was a sexual trip, and then it was like new social laws in relation to that, and then social laws in relation to ego and power manipulation. And that's what society is. Society is a set of conventions for handling people who are in the first three chakras. Now, what happens when people are in the fourth chakra? The fourth chakra person understands that you and I are one at some place or other, so possessions can't mean the same thing. Possessions can't mean the same thing. Lust can't be the same thing. How can I lust for you if you and I are one somewhere or other? That whole thing changes. So all of the energy that made the system go suddenly is starting to change when people get into the fourth chakra. That's why many of us here are really oddballs within this social structure, because we don't fit, because the rules, there's a lag, there's an inertia in the way a social order recognizes the change in the nature of the beings it's got, making up its constituency. Sixth chakra, Ajna, is the place up here between the fifth chakra is in the down in here, the throat. Sixth chakra is that's connected what's called the third eye, and there's some speculation as to its relation to the pineal gland in a physiological sense, but we're not making any correlations across from physiological and chronic centers. We're treating these as two separate systems now. I'm not really interested in which can be explained in which other system at that level, physiology. And the sixth one is primarily concerned with what is called the causal plane, or the plane of pure ideas, or Platonic pure idea. It's the understanding the laws of the universe. It's seeing how it all is. Behind matter is mind, and behind mind is the mind, and the mind is the law of the universe. And all of matter is a manifestation of that mind. And in the beginning, God created. He thought the heavens and the earth. And he thought every level out. And each of those thoughts became a manifestation. And a high yogi can think into manifestation anything he wants, because he understands that relationship between mind and matter. So when the experience of the sixth chakra is, oh, it's all so simple, because it all boils down to some very simple laws, and everything is merely permutations of that simplicity. There's laws like action and reaction, and the law of the octaves, and primarily number and form. Number, harmony, and form. Geometry is one of the closest forms of intellectual knowledge to causal plane. And the highest art and the highest music are all lawful in that sense. They are all in harmony at that plane, as well as every plane below that. And finally, the seventh plane, or the Saheshwara, which is represented as the thousand-petal lotus on the top of the head, is the final total merging with that which is beyond form, that with nirvana, with purusha. With Shiva. Shiva sits in meditation up here. Shiva is eternal, formless, always timeless, eternal, formless. Shiva sits up here. Shakti is energy. Shakti climbs up through the centers. The serpent rises, the Shakti power, the serpent power, rises up the spine, and when it gets up to the sixth chakra, Shiva and Shakti. Shakti is Shiva's consort. Shakti is the female and Shiva's the male. Shiva and Shakti are joined in union, and energy and the form and the formless become one. And in the Tibetan system, they talk about the point where you know that nirvana and sanskara are one. That is, that which is beyond form and this form are one. So at the same time, all this is, nothing is. And you know all that, and you are in those both of those levels at once. It's where Shiva and Shakti come together. And it is God consciousness.
Is that what they call the aperture as well?
Yeah, that place. The aperture as well.
When do you mention there's 8 and 9 or something?
I don't know anything about them. I just know that in systems, see, that's like, it's like that the Jivatman and the Atman and the Paramatman, namaste, the Jivatman and the Paramatman are like that part of God which is still in individual form and that part of God which is beyond individual form. And the jiva, or is the individual, and at the seventh level it's still in its individual form. It's like a difference between when the drop which has come into the ocean becomes one with the ocean and when it's still a drop. It has something to do with those seventh, eighth, and ninth chakras. Now, for our immediate purposes, most of that is academic. And we are primarily concerned with these energy conversions.
Are they all intimately connected with pranayama and kundalini? Are all these one system? Yeah,
all one system. All one system. Now you can begin to understand, if the job is to move from, say, 3 to 4, or I should make one digression and say that within, now that you understand those seven levels, you can see the additional aspect that you can do anything in life in the service of any of the other systems. It's just like in Gurdjieff, he talks about the emotions in the service of the intellect. Like, I feel bad because I think I should feel bad. And a lot of people in the West who are so intellectually, there's such an intellectual overlay, they feel so alienated from their feelings. They feel things when they think they should feel things. I should feel sad now, or I should feel happy. They manufacture feelings out of intellect. And other people who are primarily very emotional people tend to think in response to their emotions. I mean, they feel love for you and then they rationalize why they like you. Now, that same business of one system being in the service of the other, if you are primarily a second chakra person, a sexually oriented person, you can still do everything except it's all done in some relationship to sexual gratification. So that you can study, you can rape books, literally. I mean, you can get intellect and you acquire knowledge as a seduction. I mean, as a, it's almost like a sexual conquest. Your eating can be very sexual. Even your spiritual work, and a lot of the spiritual seekers get into very sexual trips about their spiritual work. Because they're primarily second chakra people and they're doing, but they're seeking to get to it like they're doing. It's like sexual compassion. Like there is an element in me that is second chakra. And there's an element in me that's third chakra. And there's an element in me that's fourth chakra. And there's an element in me that's fifth chakra. And there's an element in me that's sixth chakra. I mean, I can see all those chakras partially open in me.